Now live from Everbank Field, 1010 XL 92.5 FM presents Jaguars Today with your hosts Mike Dempsey and Tony Smith.
All right, welcome in, everybody. It is a Metro Rooter Wednesday here. Jaguars Today live at Everbank. Mike Dempsey, Fat Tony with you on 1010 XL 92.5 FM. NCAA tournament gets underway tomorrow, Tony. Officially gets underway tomorrow. Sorry about your boys.
Yeah. It's the problems that you have during a regular season don't go away magically just because the postseason begins.
You're wearing black today just to be stylish and not because you're in mourning.
I'm wearing the Jaguars gear today.
Tony, you're more than welcome to join the Indiana Hoosiers bandwagon. We play tomorrow.
I'll join bandwagons.
Yeah. We're not bandwagons.
If I'm bandwagoning anybody, it'll be whatever Cinderella's making a run. That will be whoever I bandwagon.
Sounds like y'all are
not a Cinderella.
It starts with Chattanooga tomorrow, baby. Let's go.
Stop it. Indiana is never a Cinderella.
Tyler trying to back the front runner is what he does. Tyler came up this morning, called us up, said, by the way, guys, I'm going to vote for Trump and Hillary. And can I still do that? He just wanted to make sure he was on the winning side, whatever party he elected to back on Super Tuesday.
He's got 4 months to fill out a sheet of paper and go to a library.
He's got to find a library. I don't know if his GPS goes to the library. Beecham's kind of the interesting news today, but we got a lot of things to touch on today, Tony. The question of the day brought to you by the Tom Bush Family of Dealerships is, from left to right, left tackle through right tackle, predict the Jaguars. However you want to look at it, they're starting offensive linemen for 2016. There may be multiple combinations, but what do you think will be the most frequent combination, the most likely combination maybe to start the year? However you want to look at that question, we just ask you to give us the five names from left tackle, left guard, center, right guard, and right tackle that will comprise the Jaguars' 2016 offensive line. The questions and the speculation have been, will Kelvin Beecham be able to compete for the job? I don't think there's any question, Tony, that you signed this guy at the age of 26, coming off the reputation that he had prior to his injury in Pittsburgh, that absolutely, I don't think he comes here without the clear-cut opportunity to compete for the job. I do think, ultimately, the Jaguars are going to try to put their best five offensive linemen on the field. I do think, still, the Jaguars, despite the signing, are more bullish on Luke Jokel than the public at large is on Luke Jokel. So I don't think it's out of the realm of possibility that one of these guys wins the job, one of them's the left guard. That's not a lock either. An interesting thing, when you look at the way Beecham is built, he's one of the shorter tackles in the game of football. Luke Jokel goes 6'6", 306 pounds is what I saw him listed as. He may be a little lighter than that. But Beecham is built shorter at about the same weight, 6'2", 303. So a little bit of a thicker guy. And I understand he was graded very highly as a tackle his last healthy season, which was 2 years ago in Pittsburgh. But he's built more like a guard than Luke Jokel is, right? And we talk about Luke Jokel. Does he have strength at the point of attack? That seems to be a prerequisite more for the guard position. But I think these guys clearly are going to have a battle from the first day they both step on the practice field. The question is, when will Beecham be able to step on the practice field for him?
Yeah, we'll see. We'll see. I don't know where he is in his conditioning and trying to rehab that ACL. Who knows? And hopefully we get an opportunity to talk to him when he gets done with his vacation, which he's on right now. And good for him, man. Get out there, take some time off, get away from it a little bit, especially after making the decision in free agency. That sounds like fun. I wish I could go get out of the country for a few days, but I just can't do it. I don't have the money to do it. Can't get out of here. But it's one of these situations for the Jags on that offensive line. They keep telling me how good a run blocker Luke Jokel is. Then let him play guard. You know, if he's really a good run blocker, let him play guard, and I'd be fine with that. If it turns out that he's the better left tackle than Beecham, that's fine too.
Right.
But I think it was important for this Jaguars team to add competition. Obviously, they lost their swing tackle this offseason, who wound up signing down in Miami to a one-year deal. So they didn't have that backup anymore for Luke Jokel that they felt comfortable with. So go get somebody else in that can do that for you. Could be a swing tackle if you need him to be. And getting a 26-year-old that played really well a couple seasons ago to come in and compete with a guy who we're all waiting on him to turn a corner. Whatever they're saying inside the building about how good or bad the player is, when you're watching the game and your eyes tell you a couple times a game, what is Luke doing?
Right.
You know, and when Logeman comes in on a Tuesday with us for a month straight and says, just watch his head. Just watch his head. And when it drops down, he gets in trouble. And you watch him in week 17 where it felt like he was just staring at the ground the whole game. And it can't happen. This far into his career, that just those kind of days can't happen for Luke Joeckel. To bring in a guy that's 26 years old, coming off the ACL, was a good player a couple of years ago, to compete with that guy makes all the sense in the world. And for the idea to be that one of them is going to be the left tackle and one of them is going to be the left guard seems like the most reasonable thing right now. Maybe Tyler Shatley has something to say about that when everything is said and done.
Maybe Bernadeau has something to say about
right.
that.
There's other guys that could be in the mix for that guard position. But again, when you compare where the Jags were 2 years ago on the offensive line to where they are now, going into this offseason, going into this upcoming training camp where it feels like there's legit competition at the left tackle spot for Luke Joeckel, and he's not coming off a major injury, which is good news as well, that you feel like there's three spots on the line that are locked up for you. Whatever they're going to be, Linder, Can, and Parnell are playing three of those positions. It feels like Joeckel is going to play one of those positions too and try to figure out how you're going to play around with that other one. But it feels like they have answers in-house right now for that, and answers that honestly are better than Beatles.
Well, at the very least, if Luke Joeckel's starting the season, that means he has probably stepped up his game. He's a better option at this point in time. Again, I want to see how soon Kelvin Beachum can be completely healthy and really give it a go. Keep in mind, he played he started six games last year before tearing his ACL. So it's not like this happened like Dante Fowler's did in the offseason. I'd like to find out where he is in that rehab process, and we're not going to be able to find that out until he gets back in town. We put in the request already once the paperwork is official to get him on the program and find out what the details of that deal are and what has been promised to him in terms of the opportunity that's awaiting him here. I'm not going to promise him a starting spot. That's not how it's done, particularly with a guy coming off an ACL. Now, I say it's not how it's done. Clearly, certain guys are coming in here and being signed to be handed the starting job, and they would have to work long and hard to lose it. But he's not in that circumstance, I don't think. This is not a walk-in-the-door situation, and you're our left tackle here in Jacksonville. But another one off the board for the Jags and starting to fill in holes. And yet, would I love Kelechi Osemele coming here? Absolutely. They're weighing the cost-benefit analysis of bringing these players in, still trying to keep themselves viable to sign the upcoming crop of long-term deals that they project they're going to need to have the money for. But I think the Jags are doing a hell of a job in free agency, and we can beat the Olivier Vernon story into the ground. You know, at a certain point, I don't know how much further they were supposed to go. I still see stories that say, well, the Jags, here's the, like Mike DiRocco. I'm not picking on Mike. This is his opinion. He covers a team for ESPN, of course. He says, hey, every team's getting a grade by their beat writers from the NFL Nation group on ESPN. And he gives them a B because they didn't get Olivier Vernon. You know, the pursuit, even though they signed a bunch of their targets, okay, I mean, they didn't get him. So at a certain point, let's say they had offered $60 million guaranteed, and the Giants come back and say $65 million. Do you stop? Is there ever a point you should stop, or is there a certain subset of the fan base and the media out there that thinks no matter what the price was, if they didn't get Olivier Vernon, it can't be a completely successful free agent period? I don't know how that all works out. Got some thoughts on Robert Ayers coming up. Interesting story on Big Cat Country, and we'll tell you how much of that coincides with what we're hearing about the Jaguars' pursuit of Robert Ayers here in Jacksonville. Also, we'll talk to Tony Pauline later in the show this morning about Miles Jack's pro day. The UCLA linebacker, not yet ready to run the 40-yard dash, says he's about 80% healthy. Put up some pretty good numbers in some of the other workout categories for a guy who's only 80% healthy. He's supposed to run on April 1st, no fooling. That's when Miles Jack will do his 40-yard dash. If you want to get in today, 641-1010 is the phone number. It's also the text number. You can also tweet us with the question of the day brought to you by the Tom Bush Family of Dealerships. What will the Jaguars starting five offensive linemen look like from left to right? Give me the five names. At MD underscore 1010XL, at 1010XL Fat Tony, at 1010XL Tyler, or on the Jaguars Today Facebook page. Wednesday's brought to you by Metro Rooter. Just getting started. It's Jaguars Today on 1010XL and 92.5 FM. All right, Jaguars Today on a Metro Rooter Wednesday. John Osier from Jaguars.com will join us coming up in about 15 minutes or so on the program. Mike Dempsey, Fat Tony. I wouldn't say inundated, Tony, but I got a number of tweets in my Twitter inbox, if whatever you want to call it. I got a number of tweets directed at me. Yes, mentions, whatever, notifications that say, hey, remember that guy Super Pat? He was right, Chandler Jones, he got traded to the Arizona Cardinals. Super Pat was the guy who called up with, who told us to Google him because he was Super Pat and we should know who he is. And he claimed that the Patriots were going to release Chandler Jones, outright let him go, walk, be free. At which point we said, yeah, sure. If the Patriots release Chandler Jones, the Jaguars should be all over it. He called saying basically that, and we doubled down. We said, you're telling us that the Patriots are going to let a, whatever he is, 25, 26-year-old pass rusher, the best pass rusher on the team, certainly among them, just go. Yes, I know they are. That was his direct quote. So no, for those who thinking were thinking that Super Pat was somehow correct, he couldn't have been more wrong. In fact, they traded him for a starting offensive lineman and a second-round pick, which is pretty much the opposite of outright releasing a guy. I guess it's not the opposite because he is no longer a member of the team. So maybe he had his wires crossed, but he didn't present his case very well. I'll just say that. But Jags were reported to be one of the teams that were interested, and why wouldn't they be, Tony? He fits the profile, you know, and that the question is, you're willing to pay Olivier Vernon X amount. Well, what are you willing to pay Chandler Jones? He's got one more year in his deal, and plus you'd have to give up something to get him. A la, you look what Arizona gave up. They gave up a second-round pick and a starting offensive lineman. Well, do the Jags have starting offensive linemen to spare? So would the Jags have given their own second-round pick? Typically, Dave Caldwell hasn't shown an inclination to go that route because those picks are so valuable, particularly those high second-rounders, because you can lock those guys in on deals at pretty cost-effective contracts for a long time and hopefully get the same amount of production. Now, you're not guaranteed to get Chandler Jones' production that he's given the Patriots, but to give him – to give up, let's say, a high second-round pick and then have to pay the contract on top of that. Imagine they didn't want to go beyond a certain point with Olivier Vernon. You don't think Chandler Jones, if he hits unrestricted free agency, is going to command that kind of deal? I absolutely think he'd get an Olivier Vernon kind of deal, just based on the way the market is with the amount of cap space that it seems like it's going to be available year after year.
Yeah, and you got to wonder what – I mean, they – I don't know if they can or had reached out to Chandler Jones, his representation, and what they were talking about as far as if we were going to make this kind of deal, how willing would Chandler be to renegotiate his contract now, get an extension done so we don't have to worry about it all year long. It's not something that's hanging over our head. We gave up a second-round pick, and we're going to get him, what, for a year?
Right.
And I think that's a risk if you're going to go out there and make that trade. If it was as simple as give up a second-round pick for Chandler Jones, no-brainer. Like there's no,
and you had him locked
right,
up.
There's no thinking about that. That's a done deal. If it was, it's a second round pick, and you got to give us AJ Cann, say for instance. Then I'm thinking, right? Because then I'm opening up another spot on my offensive line that I'm going to have questions about going into the future, and I'm giving up that second round pick. And so then I'd have to think about it if I were the Jags. And I don't know how deep into the conversations they were with the Patriots about this thing. And I don't know if Chandler Jones is going to be a member of the Arizona Cardinals for more than a year. I know Jonathan Cooper has been a tremendous disappointment in his time in the league. Tremendous disappointment since he got to the Arizona Cardinals. A very well-thought-out prospect coming into the league, but it's given them nothing. There was one game this year, I was reading about this deal yesterday, there was a game this year where healthy for a game, Jonathan Cooper was put in the game for a snap, was beat on the play for a sack, taken off the field, never saw it again. That's the kind of player that Jonathan Cooper's been in the league. So that's what they're giving the Patriots, who need offensive line help. And the Patriots are looking at a draft where they feel like they can go get a defensive lineman in the second round that may be able to help them. Not at the level of Chandler Jones. And then they follow that up by signing Chris Long yesterday afternoon as well. But it's the contract on top of it
right,
that I think scared the Jaguars off if they were involved with those conversations with the Patriots.
Right, and I think that's probably what scared the Patriots off, too.
And Chandler Jones' representation may have said, we're not signing a long-term deal with Jacksonville.
Or he may have said, we're not signing one with New England. They right. want to force it either. You're going to have to franchise tag us and pay us an obscene amount of money for 1 year, which becomes then the basis and the starting point for a long-term contract. Or, hey, guess who's going to be next year's Olivier Vernon on the market? It's me. So do you want to pay a contract or top a contract that just paid out $52.5 million guaranteed,
sure.
more guaranteed money than J.J. Watt?
And honestly, I still would have thought hard about it. I mean, Chandler's that kind of player. The idea of having him in-house for a year and being able to talk to him exclusively basically for that year about trying to get something done for the next year, and you can control him with the franchise tag if that's the direction you need to go, and they're certainly not going to be cash-strapped going into next offseason either. So it certainly would have been a consideration for me if I was the Jags, and that really was all that the asking price was a second-round pick. But if it became, say, Arizona and Jacksonville were both willing to give a second-round pick, and then Arizona said, well, we'll give you Cooper, too. Like, if that became part of the negotiation, we'll give you Cooper, too, and New England came back and said, look, this is kind of what we're hearing from them. Is there an offensive lineman you'd be willing to part with? If I'm Caldwell, I'm not parting with one of my starting offensive linemen and the second-round pick.
Right,
and
you
having
don't
the
even
contract
know if you've got
five
starting-caliber offensive linemen right now that'll be ready to start the season.
Right.
As far as it goes.
If it was just the second, even with the contract thing, I still think hard about it. If it's the second and one of my starting linemen, no.
You and I may have thought hard about it. It doesn't seem to fit the Jaguars' profile of giving up the big contract on top of that. I mean, because if you're going to do that, just give up the big contract to Olivier Vernon, right? Don't stop. They were already well outside their comfort zone. Maybe they would value Chandler Jones more, but I don't know how much more money you'd feel comfortable giving him, and then to give a second-round pick on top of that for a team that still wants to stockpile young, explosive talent and is looking to find some more in this upcoming draft. Just didn't see that as being a Jaguar-type move at this point in time. No problem checking in, you know, taking the temperature of the Patriots or any other team that has a player out there on the block. That doesn't mean you ever got close to making a substantial offer. Doesn't mean it doesn't, but it looks like the Jags are probably not a serious player in this situation. The Robert Ayers thing, a little bit interesting because the Big Cat Country's got a story they posted this morning. It kind of coincides with some stuff that we have heard over the last couple of days in terms of what would have happened if Robert Ayers come here. You know, would he have been a 4-3 end? How would they have used him? And their story talks about the Jaguars' point of view that they wanted to use him as an inside pass rusher. And I think there's a lot of truth to that. I think the Jags did see him, despite the fact that they quote some stats from Jordan Ronan of New Jersey Advanced Media, who's a very good reporter, by the way, that Ayers had 7.5 of his 9.5 coming off the edge last year. I think that the questions weren't so much with the Jags. I think the questions probably came from Robert Ayers' camp. If you plan on using me on the inside, which he has done a lot in his career, he's moved inside on third down, a la a guy like Ryan Davis, to try to find a suitable matchup. Well, you have Malik Jackson. You have Sendarek Marks, right? What is my role, and how big is my role going to be here in Jacksonville? And I'll put it this way. I don't think that they necessarily looked at him and said, okay, we can have Dante Fowler on one end, we can have Robert Ayers on the other, solves our pass rush dilemma. Would he have been a part-time guy? Could you have used him on the edge on third down? Possibly. I don't know that that's how they viewed him as a player, though. So I tend to agree with the overall gist of the Big Cat Country article, I think, is accurate. They do speculate a little bit about there where it says they say it says a lot about the interior rushers already in the Jags' possession. I don't think it necessarily does. I think you're out there, you're looking at guys that have been productive as pass rushers on the market. Let's talk to this guy. Let's see if there's a fit. Let's see if he'll be willing to take maybe a smaller role. From everything I've heard, including a conversation we had with Dave Caldwell last week, Sendarek Marks is expected to be fully healthy by the start of OTAs, Tony. You got him. You got a lot of bodies stacking up, particularly guys that have the flexibility to play the inside. And you got to figure Malik Jackson and Sendarek Marks are going to play a high percentage of those snaps on third down. How much use would you have gotten out of Robert Ayers in that circumstance?
Well, it goes back to the questions that we had going into free agency that we debated for a couple months of, all right, if the idea for the Jaguars is they have to improve the pass rush, if they don't get Olivier Vernon, how? I mean, we talked about that a lot. If you're not going to land Olivier Vernon, then who are you going to be able to bring in free agency at that Leo spot specifically that's really going to help you in the pass rush department? And I think that kind of conversation about Robert Ayers only goes to further that point. That if it wasn't going to be Olivier Vernon in this free agency class, then who was it going to be? I think Ayers is a guy that could have come in on a rotational basis on first and second down. Really good run defender. Has been his whole career. That's been one of the things Ayers has been able to do his whole career. He's a good rush defender because he is kind of that bigger end guy. So could he come in on first and second down when they wanted to spell Dante Fowler Jr. a little bit? Yeah, he could. And I think he'd be effective in that kind of role. On third down, what would his role be? I don't know. Because I'm guessing they want to have Dante Fowler Jr. on the field for every third down.
Right, and when you're talking about spelling a guy, that to me is not expecting a lot of pass rush. When you play on first and second down in a sub situation, as part of a rotation, that's not where you're expected to generate a lot of pass rush.
No, but I think Robert Ayers is a more effective pass rusher than Andre Branch or Clemens would have been.
I don't doubt that.
I think he's an upgrade as the, hey, we're subbing this guy in. I think there would be times where he does get rushed because he's a more effective player than those guys are. And from that perspective, I would have been good with the signing. I wanted them to sign.
So did I.
Robert Ayers. But I think it is interesting the discussion we're having goes back to one that we had, where if it wasn't going to be Vernon, then how are they really going to upgrade this pass rush in this offseason? And maybe that's why Dave Caldwell was willing to get out of his comfort zone for a guy like Vernon, because he saw the same thing. How much are we really going to be able to affect that position if it's not this guy? Because he was looking at the other guys in the market, like Ayers, and saying, well, maybe he is kind of an inside rush guy. He's not really that for us. He would be kind of this inside guy, and Vernon was an edge rusher. That's what he is, and I think that's part of the reason that he was willing to go so far after Olivier Vernon. And when you're hearing from the other guy on the other end of the phone that he just wants to go to New York, like, when that's the end scenario for you, then you were never going to win that. Once the Giants got in, they had him, was basically what it was, because the Giants were obviously willing to spend whatever it took to get Olivier Vernon to come to New York, and the Jaguars couldn't offer enough money to overcome the fact that he wanted to be in New York as opposed to Jacksonville.
In fact, my feeling is they may have actually offered more, in the sense that with no state income tax, his compensation may have actually topped out here in Florida over that in New York. But I don't think it came down to the final dollar for him. I think you hit that point where, okay, they're giving me $52.5 million guaranteed. Let's say, and I'm just making this up, let's say the Jags were going to give him $55 million guaranteed over a 5-year deal. Is it, at that point, is it that much worth it to chase the last penny if you really like the other situation that much better?
Right.
I kind of doubt it. And look, here's how they think they're trying to improve the pass rush, okay? First of all, they're making efforts, but you hope to get a healthy Fowler and Marks back, A, so you get better internally. You hope to get some push from Malik Jackson and have him create some chaos that draws some double teams that opens up more one-on-one opportunities for other guys to hopefully exploit, whether he's getting the sacks himself or not. And maybe you hope right now, as we heard from Dave Caldwell, to use Dan Scuda in more of a designated pass rush role, particularly on third down, which is something they wanted to do last year, and then he got hurt right about the time they were looking to implement that, and they never really were able to get that off the ground. So they think there is a chance to find some internal improvement from guys on their own roster. Nobody's saying it wouldn't have been better to have Olivier Vernon, but again, there's a limit to what you can do. You got to have both sides playing ball on that, and there's only so much that any team is going to spend. There are a lot of people out there that think the Giants gave the craziest contract out by far in free agency. Maybe it will pay off. Maybe it won't. We see these things every year. We question the big money, the big ticket items, pretty much a year into it. Everyone's saying, did he live up to it? Was he really worth that? Maybe he will be, maybe he won't. I think that's going to be a hard one to live up to. We got John Osier coming up here in just a few minutes. Tony Pauline from DraftInsider.net will join us next hour to take a look at the what Miles Jack was able to do, at least at his pro day, did the vertical and some of the other workouts, but did not run the 40-yard dash. We're watching a little video of him right now on NFL Network throughout his pro day workout yesterday. By the way, interestingly enough, the Chargers were putting him through defensive back drills. I don't know if you caught that, Tony. Okay. Well, they sit there with the third pick in the draft, right?
I know they do.
Let's say Jalen Ramsey's off the board. Could they be looking at Miles Jack as the replacement for Eric Weddle? Keep in mind, this guy, as Tony Pauline regarded him, as the best coverage linebacker he has ever graded, period. And all his time watching NFL film, previously that title went to Luke Kuechly. So just curious to see how other teams may be viewing a prospect that I think a lot of Jag fans would be very happy with the fifth pick in the draft. It is a Metro Rooter Wednesday, coming back with John Osier from Jaguars.com right here on 1010XL and 92.5 FM. All right, here we go. Oh, no's on a Metro Rooter Wednesday. Johnny O here with us, the senior writer for Jaguars.com. We were just bonding over our former passion for college basketball, watching college basketball. John, I was just talking with the guys of XL Primetime yesterday, saying that, not that I'm not enthusiastic, the NCAA tournament is great because you turn it on at noon on Thursday, and it doesn't matter what the matchup is. To me, it's all right. Compelling.
But in the old days, you and I used to turn, and I'm sure you speak for a lot of fans. In the old days, we would all turn it on at noon on Thursday and know exactly who was playing.
You knew all the teams.
Now that's my learning curve.
Right.
Now the first round of the tournament is when I find somebody to sort of attach to. I used to be a huge Carolina fan. I got on their bandwagon when they won, lost to IU in 81. And then I sort of started following. They won the national championship next year, and I was all in on Carolina for 10 or 15 years. Now I sort of pick them up when they play Duke twice during the regular season and watch. So by the tournament, I'm sort of following them. And if they get to the Elite Eight, I'll know enough of their guys where I'm sort of pulling for them in the Final Four.
Have you filled out a bracket?
No.
Will you fill out a bracket?
Well, I will. If my son texts me tonight from college and says, "Are you filling out a bracket?" I'll probably rush and find one and fill it out.
What if I text you right now and ask you to fill one out?
You don't mean very much to me.
We can all go over them tomorrow. Come on, man. You didn't give birth to me, or you didn't sire me. Anyway, I don't know.
We usually scramble around at 9:30 on Wednesday. But, like, again, back in the day, I can remember when I was – I forget. It was the year IU won it. I'm dating myself, but IU won in 81 with Isaiah.
Yeah.
And it was an incredible tournament. That was the first round where Orlando Blackman hit a shot. U.S. Reed hit from 50 feet for Arkansas. I mean, it was one of the legendary Saturdays.
I remember the Sports Illustrated cover, right. And A Child Shall Lead Them, yeah. With Isaiah,
right.
On the cover. Yeah.
And that was one of the first years where it really picked up steam. Greg Gumbel was on it, and they were flashing back and forth on a Saturday afternoon. And I had a bracket made out of poster board that year. You know,
nice.
I had gone.
You
and
made
I,
it yourself, right?
I feel that. That's how into it I was. And
I used to make fantasy football draft boards on my own thing, like on a poster board. Too.
Yeah, and I got into it. A friend of mine in high school, Melissa McClain, her dad was a huge UNC fan. They went to the Final Four the next year. So I really attached to Carolina, and I was into it. And now it's just like, okay. I mean, I don't discount anybody who does. But and I guess I speak for a lot of people our age. When everybody started going pro so fast and it was one and done,
you couldn't keep up
I'm
with the rosters anymore.
I'm the old fogey
anymore.
Who said, I just can't. Now, you talk to other people who follow AAU basketball hardcore at that age, and they love the guys come in, they compete right away. The freshmen are really, really good players. When I was covering recruiting in basketball, I was into it on that level because I would follow the high school guys. I would know who was coming in, and it was cool to see them in sort of all-star situations and go into it. So I get how you could be into it. It's just not my sport anymore.
There was nothing better. Pre-internet days, there was nothing better, truly, in sports on the calendar than the Monday copy of USA Today right after Selection Sunday. You got all the capsules, and you had to have it.
Right.
You carried that sports section around with you the entire week.
It was dog-eared.
Everywhere,
yeah.
Right. It was dog-eared, and you had your bracket
had
filled out
the TV
on the paper.
The whole week. Sure.
You had the whole thing, and you read all the capsules, and you're like, yeah, so you're looking at the size of the starting lineups, and you'd never seen Robert Morris play that year, but you felt the time it tipped off
I remember
like you
the
had
year
an idea.
That Syracuse lost to IU, which was 87. Derek Coleman's year.
Yep. Derek Coleman had, what, he had like
Smart
17
hit
rebounds in the championship game, something like
that.
That
game, that was the year Shinsis and Florida got hot and almost got all, you know. I remember the USA Today being just dog-eared by my girlfriend's black and white TV.
Sherm Douglas, you know. Coleman.
Yeah.
Was Cycli on that team?
Cycli was on that team. And that was the team.
Billy Owens on that team?
I believe yes.
Billy Owens?
If I'm not wrong, Florida fans will know this, but I think Syracuse beat a Florida Sweet 16 or Elite Eight because Florida was really good then.
Is that right?
Yeah. I mean, they
Pearl
had,
Washington gone by then?
Yeah, because Pearl had started it in the early 80s when the Big East tournament really got good on MSG Network.
Right.
And that was the
Big East basketball back then was
Pearl
crazy.
Played more against the early Georgetown teams, I believe.
That's what I thought. All right.
That's fun stuff.
Let's talk a little Jag stuff here with Johnny Hill, the basketball guy.
It's about as deep as I can go on college basketball with what we did right there.
That's all right. That was good. That's as deep as I can go as well. Kelvin Beachum clearly appears that that this guy doesn't agree to come here at this stage, only a week into free agency, unless he feels like there is a commitment to letting him compete for anything, including the left tackle position.
My guess is, and I haven't had a chance to talk to him yet, the word on him very early on in free agency was he was not going to move to guard and he was going to play left tackle. Well, you get the idea that maybe that guarantee wasn't out there in the league for him with the ACL coming off that. But certainly, I don't think there's any question he's coming in with the idea that if he outplays Luke Jokel, if he's the better fit, then he can start a left guard. At the same time, I heard you talking about it. I think you're dead on. I don't think this is necessarily that we're sitting here in mid-March saying Kelvin Beachum's definitely left tackle, because if you look at the body type, he has more experience and appears to be a better on-paper fit at guard than Jokel would be. So I think that, you know, if you had the ideal thing play out, I think Jokel would play to the level that everybody wants him to.
Right, he'd beat him out.
And that it would be awesome, and you'd have and all of a sudden, the thing that might get lost in the conversation about left tackle, left tackle, left tackle right now is, boy, all of a sudden you've got a few more guys who you feel legitimately good about playing on the offensive line than you did a year and a half ago, meaning Parnell, Jokel, Linder, Beachum,
Khan.
Yeah,
Khan.
I mean,
Caldwell calls him Khan.
It's Khan.
It's Khan. I know it is, but it takes me about a week to shake it. After
when Khan signed the
Dave.
Check, you call everybody Khan, Mike.
Well, that's true. I guess that's right. They're all Sean's children.
No, but it appears, and you know how you never know until how these guys get on the field and play out. It certainly appears like you have a lot more options and things you feel good about on game day, adding Kelvin Beachum no matter where he plays. I'm surprised that I got a lot of emails, will they get competition for Luke Jokel in the offseason? I kind of poo-pooed it a little bit because it seemed like a long shot to be able to do that, because if I'm a free agent for the most part and I'm a left tackle, I'm automatically saying, well, you got a number two overall pick over there. I don't care what you tell me in the meeting room. Realistically, you're going to play the number two pick. But that's really not the way these guys operate. And I think from their part, once they got Kelvin Beachum in the room and and around, they said, we've got a chance to get this guy. I think it's – wow, that was a little off.
You guys all right there?
It's coming down.
Noise from above. But I'm surprised – that they were able to get a guy who is a legitimate veteran starting option at left tackle, and good for them, because I think it's obviously a good move that makes them stronger.
Have you heard length of contract?
Just the reports that said 2 years. I haven't heard inside the building.
Well, two would make sense, because you're not going to sign him to a 1 year deal coming off torn ACL, right?
Because
you don't know. He doesn't know. I mean, it's better for the team to have a 2 year deal than if he turns out to be something. You've got him for one more year. You can work on getting a long term deal done.
Week six though
gives
him a shot.
Too.
You know, week six with this ACL is a lot different than when Sen tore it on week 17.
No doubt.
You know, I can do math. It's 11, 12 weeks.
Certainly not as favorable as the timing of Dante Fowler.
Sure.
Doing it, right?
But
so,
with a lineman at that position, I always go back. Bocelli tore his in 99 in the last game of the season. And by week 5 or 6, he told me later, it took him to week 5 or 6 where he was really feeling solid on it. So that time frame can work. Now, Bocelli is sort of a freakish athlete and a special player, made the Pro Bowl the next year. I think we're looking at that. But can you get back and start contributing? Yeah. Now, I guess the question would be, how much competition can there be if he's really working his way back through this ACL? It might not be a case where the competition starts as early as a lot of fans might like.
Or it might be a case, let's say he's ready for training camp, right?
Right.
And he's not able at that point because he's ready to play, but he's still getting up to speed on everything, that he has enough time to overtake Luke Jokel. But he's a developmental insurance policy that you've got right there under your nose, who I think is looked at as a big upgrade. When you look at your three tackles, you got to have three tackles on your team. And when you right now you say Parnell, Jokel and Beachum compared to Parnell, Jokel and Sam Young, I think you feel like you've got a better
group.
When you
add that to having Linder back and Bernardo over there as who I feel like is really good, experienced, no matter how much they like Bowenko and Shatley, gives you two more guys. And I think a key here too is it gives you two more guys who can move around. Active players on game day are very important in the offensive line. teams ideally would like to be able to go in with seven.
Right. To have some versatility.
That's really ideal.
To be able to play multiple
spots. But a guy like Beacham, maybe you play him at guard, but you feel like if he's playing at guard and something happens to one of the tackles, he can move out. He's active on game day. You don't need to have a roster spot dedicated. Also, who knows? Maybe Beacham starts out at guard. And if Luke struggles, you can move him to tackle.
Exactly. So, you know, there are a lot of combinations they can play with that.
And it's the versatility, and it feels like high-end versatility that I'm a little surprised they were able to get in free agency. Obviously, probably couldn't have had this situation had he not been hurt.
I mean, you look at where they stand now. They knocked out 75% of their initial four targets, obviously missed on Olivier Vernon, got the other guys done in the first wave. They've since added to that. They signed another starter, projected starter in Prince Amukamara. They visited with Sean Spence yesterday. I forget who's he off to visit with today, Tony. You see who? He's off to visit with another team today. So clearly they haven't agreed to anything yet, but he's on the radar.
And he's a depth option.
Right. I mean, and they need that, right?
The
not
Titans.
Everybody is it the Titans. Thank you, Tyler.
Was that God?
It was.
That was Tyler. Okay.
God as Tyler. Hi, God. It's me, Tyler. Not everybody's going to be a frontline guy that you bring in or is expected to compete for a starting spot.
But I think they feel like they've got a lot of holes or whatever. They can go into the draft. I just got a question about Miles Jack. Does this all mean Miles Jack is the number five overall pick? Well, no, because they don't know who's going to slip to them. But if you do look at their lineup, they're in pretty good shape for being able to go to bring in six or seven young, defensive, athletic guys no matter where they fit on the roster. And that's what they need to do. They need to increase that speed. They need to get better on special teams, fast, fast, fast. They have a chance to really canvas the whole roster on defense in the draft. I think that's what Dave really wants to do.
Yeah, I'd like to really know how they feel about Joey Bosa and, you know, whether he's an explosive enough guy to spend the fifth pick on, because he may be the best all around, the safest defensive end. Doesn't mean you're looking for a guy with the fifth pick, I think, that can be a special difference maker at his position. I feel more strongly that Ramsey and Jack fit that category.
I think
more
they
clearly
feel
than
like
Bosa.
They need, I don't think they feel like they're done at edge. I think they really feel like they need something there. I don't feel like they are as panicky over this as some factions of the fan base are. I think you got that feeling talking to Dave on Friday, that there's not that, oh my gosh, we have to go this way, you know, now. But they're in a situation where Dave feels like they're going to get somebody good at that spot at number five, and it does feel like he's thinking the same way you are. Let's make sure we get special there rather than reaching for a need that might not be special.
All right. He is John Osier. He's always special. It's always a special time when he's with us. What do you have coming up over the next few days?
Breaking down the roster a little bit, trying to provide a feel for sort of where they stand after free agency. The roster and the dynamics of some positions change quite a bit. You know, if you look at running back, if you look at offensive line, they did a lot to change how you're going to view this roster coming up.
Let's go play ball.
Can't wait.
We got enough now. Let's go play ball. We'll add a few more. It's okay. We'll still have the draft. We'll still conduct it. Let's go play some ball, man.
We
go fill
May,
out that
June,
bracket,
July
Johnny.
Coming up.
All right? Go fill it out.
Looking forward to it, buddy.
I think I'm going to text your son to text you tonight at 9:30. Of course, I got to get his number first, but I'll work on that.
Look forward to that.
Of the day. I'm sure you
All right,
did.
Guys. Thank you.
See you, John. John Osier, senior writer from Jaguars.com. Coming back this Dayton football and the Honda drive around the NFL. It's a Metro Rooter Wednesday on Jaguars Today on 1010XL and 92.5 FM.
Now, Jaguars Today on 1010XL, 92.5 FM. And now, this date in football history.
All right, this state football history chock full of birthdays on this March 16th, and it's brought to you by Dr. James McCall's Comprehensive and Cosmetic Dentistry. And they're all separated by 5 years, Tony, at least the ones I've got on the board. 1951, Joe DeLamelier, the Hall of Fame guard for the Buffalo Bills in the 1970s, and he is a big advocate for the Gridiron Greats program, you know, making sure that former players are taken care of as well as possible medically after their retirement. He turned 65 today. He was a six-time Pro Bowler, three-time first-team All-Pro, was a starting guard in the NFL. You know what he was listed at? 254 pounds.
The game has changed.
Hall of Fame guard in the 1970s, 254 pounds.
Basically,
that's like 70 or 80 pounds lighter than some guards play at.
That's
now
about 5 to 7 pounds heavier than Miles Jack. And there
right
are teams considering playing him in the secondary.
Right. Did the Chargers work him out as a safety yesterday at his pro day? 1956, Ozzie Newsome, born on this date in football history. Maybe he'll go down as a Hall of Fame front office man, as well as a Hall of Fame player. He was inducted as a player in 1999. He turned 60 today, a three-time Pro Bowler and a one-time first-team All-Pro. 1961, Tony, saw the birth of Mel Gray, one of the all-time leading return yardage specialists in National Football League history, a four-time Pro Bowler in his own right, and a three-time first-team All-Pro. And then in 1966, a guy that I think is probably best known for marrying Holly Robinson, Rodney Peete, was born, a longtime NFL quarterback of not much distinction. He turns 50 years old today, and his wife is still as gorgeous as she ever was. We see her every year at the Super Bowl. This date in football brought to you by Dr. James McCall's Comprehensive and Cosmetic Dentistry. They're on Gate Parkway. If you need cosmetic work done or you're in the market for a family dentist, call Dr. McCall's office at 620-9225. Or check them out online at jamesjmccall.com to get a complete list of comprehensive care services. That is this date in football history.
Now the Honda Drive Around the NFL, brought to you by your First Coast Honda dealers.
The New England Patriots traded defensive end Chandler Jones, who finished fifth in the NFL with 12.5 sacks yesterday, to Arizona in exchange for offensive guard Jonathan Cooper and the Cardinals' second-round pick. Cooper was the number 7 overall pick 2 years ago in the NFL draft. The Patriots do not have a first-round pick this year as a result of the whole Deflategate saga. The Patriots stayed busy after that yesterday, signing or agreeing to a contract with defensive end Chris Long on a one-year deal. Junior Gallette, one of the pass rushers still out there in free agency, has been swallowed up. A one-year deal with Washington, the soon-to-be 28-year-old, has 22 sacks in the last two seasons that he was allowed to play, in 2013 and 2014 in New Orleans. Of course, he also has a video of him attacking people on a beach with a belt. Cleveland has agreed to a two-year, $8 million deal with inside linebacker Demario Davis, who spent the last 4 years with the New York Jets, three of those years as a starter. And the Oakland Raiders and offensive tackle Donald Penn have agreed to a new deal. Penn was supposed to be visiting with the Giants yesterday, and after he and the Raiders couldn't see eye-to-eye on a new deal, Penn never left Oakland to visit New York, as the two sides came to an agreement before Penn's plane left the ground in Oakland.
All right, there you go. Tony, pop quiz time. Are you ready for your semi-weekly pop quiz?
I guess so.
Jaguars today. It's an easy one. Well, an easy one. It's a short one. Put it that way. Two players that are currently active in the National Football League are among the top 10 all-time return yardage leaders in National Football League history. That's punt and kickoff returns combined. Can you tell me who those two players are?
Devin Hester.
Correct.
Who would the other guy be?
The other guy's actually ahead of him.
I don't know.
Darren Sproles.
Oh, yeah, Sproles.
Hey, probably. If you had gone like team by team, you probably would have come up with
maybe,
it.
Maybe, yeah.
Brian Mitchell, your all-time leader. Allen Rossum, Josh Cribbs, Mel Gray, whose birthday is today. Glenn Milburn, who holds the single-game mark with, like, I want to say, like 394, maybe it's 404 total yards, including kickoff and punt returns. Dante Hall, he was a big thing for a while there. Man, was he good. Then Sproles, Desmond Howard, former Jaguar great. Devin Hester, Kevin Williams, Leon Washington, Jacksonville's own, comes in 11th. All time. Pretty good stuff there from Leon and company. All right, if you'd like to get in, 641-1010. We'll check the text line coming up. We'll also check in a little early look at the fan feedback spotlight, because coming up at 1140 today, Tony Pauline of DraftInsider.net is going to stop by for just a few minutes to give us his thoughts on where things stand with Miles Jack after his pro day yesterday. The UCLA linebacker does not run a 40-yard dash, not medically completely cleared to do everything yet, although he says he wanted to get out there so people realize he's still alive, he's still going. He said he's about 80% healthy, and if that's the case, did some really nice stuff yesterday, including a 40-inch vertical leap in that regard. Seemed to move around pretty well, but he is scheduled to run his 40 in a couple of weeks coming up, and certainly
he's doing like another pro day like April 1st, essentially.
Right. It's probably that's kind of like his private workout day, I guess, but I guess any team's going to be invited. Today or yesterday was UCLA's pro day. Miles Jack will have his own on April Fool's Day coming up. And again, I really find it interesting, that little nugget about the Chargers working him out in the secondary. He was the most bummed about dropping an interception in drills where he was working as a safety yesterday. They were doing defensive back drills with him, and you think, man, that's kind of crazy. But if anybody at his size could do it, he's probably the best equipped based on the scouting reports you've heard about his coverage ability. But, boy, you would love to see him as a playmaking linebacker here in Jacksonville. At least we would. All right, we'll take a break. We'll come back and take your calls if you're so inclined at 641-1010. Question of the day is this. Brought to you by the Tom Bush Family of Dealerships. Project the Jaguars' starting offensive line for 2016 from left to right. Left tackle through right tackle. We'll get into that coming up next as Kelvin Beachum, the newest member of the offensive line, to the party. Mike Dempsey, Fat Tony on a Metro Rooter Wednesday. It's Jaguars Today on 1010XL and 92.5 FM. All right, we continue along here. Mike Dempsey, Fat Tony. Metro Rooter is our sponsor every Wednesday on Jaguars Today for all size plumbing jobs in home. That would be residential plumbing, commercial plumbing for your business, industrial plumbing, septic systems, restaurant grease trap service, you name it. If you can think of something that has to do with plumbing, Metro Rooter likely has a solution with same-day service, weekends included, the right people and the right equipment. That is what makes Metro Rooter so special and so effective. And they've been serving Jacksonville and the surrounding area since 1978. Trust them to come to my house. They've been there several times when I've had plumbing issues, and I've always been satisfied. MetroRooter.com is the website. Call 695-1911, 695-1911 for Metro Rooter, our Wednesday sponsor here on Jaguars Today on 1010XL and 92.5 FM. Tony, before we get to some of the fan feedback spotlight today, let me run through a few texts that we've gotten in throughout the course of the program. You can always text this show or any other at 641-1010, same as the call-in line. As a matter of fact, we've got Gary on the line on the south side. Let's get Gary on the phone, then we'll get to the text line immediately afterwards. Gary, good morning. You're on Jaguars Today. Go ahead.
Good morning, guys. How are you?
Good, thanks.
I realized that the Patriots were looking for offensive line help, but they're also bringing in receivers to like a. What about if the Jags took a different kind of tack and said a second rounder in either Marquise Lee or Rashad Green? What about that possibility?
I still don't think they would have done it, because you're looking at a circumstance. This is my opinion, by the way. You're looking at a circumstance, Tony, where. What kind of contract is Chandler Jones going to command next year? I got to believe if he has a year that's indicative of his first 4 years in the National Football League. Keep in mind, he was a first-round pick. That's why he was the fifth-year option was picked up on his deal. That's why he's not a free agent like Olivier Vernon. That he would get an Olivier Vernon-type contract next year, right? So if you're going to pay that out, why not just pay it out? And you've already gone outside your comfort zone with Olivier Vernon. Why not go further outside? To me, to expect that we're going to get a year out of this guy, let's hope he plays that way, and then we're going to have to give him a contract like Olivier Vernon and give up a second-round pick, a high second-round pick, and a young receiver who, by the way, they believe in both of those guys. I know we haven't seen Marquise Lee do very much because he hasn't been able to stay consistently healthy. They still believe in his talent. Now's not the time they're going to look at and say, let's just use this guy as a throw-in to get a deal done. They love Rashad Green and what he did last year. This guy brought a dynamic, explosive element in the return game that we haven't seen in a long time. I just, no way for me that they're going to give up that kind, I mean, a second-round pick and one of those guys, and knowing you're going to have to sign into a Olivier Vernon-type contract next year, just a non-starter as far as I'm concerned. That's me, personally, though.
Yeah, look, like I said, I think if it was just the second-round pick that I'd have to think hard about it. I think once you started talking about throwing in an offensive lineman, my answer would have become no. Marquise Lee, I would have had to think about it.
You would have thought about a second-round pick, Marquise Lee, and knowing you're going to have to sign into that kind
yeah,
of contract.
I would have.
Oof, I wouldn't.
I would have thought about it. Now, I don't know. My guess is I'm probably coming down on the side of no, but I would have thought about that for half a second. I'm not giving up one of my starting offensive linemen, but it's because of how good I feel about Rashad Green would be the reason that I'd consider Marquise Lee as kind of that Cooper equivalent, where it's, yeah, we invested a pretty high pick on this guy, but he's not panning out for us. if he becomes somebody else's issue here for the next year, okay. Now, could he have gone to New England and been... If he stays healthy, I think Marquise Lee can be a pretty darn good player in this league. So it's a risk either way. But when it was just the pick, I'd seriously consider it. Once you started talking about throwing in these guys, probably not.
It may be semantics, but to me, not panning out for us and hasn't panned out for us yet are two different things. And I think he's in the latter category. Now, you get through another year and you've gotten the same kind of result from Marquise Lee, then you've got a question, is he ever going to pan out for us? But this is a critical season for him. But to me, it's his body that's betrayed him, not his talent that has betrayed him. I don't think they feel like they missed on the talent with Marquise Lee, and I think they'd hate to let him go at this point in time when maybe if he can stay healthy, he'll just start to realize the talent that had a lot of people thinking he would go in the first round of the draft. But anyway, Gary, I appreciate you calling the show and putting your thinking cap on, trying to come up with some different scenarios there. Let's see. Here's one on the text line. I'm really starting to sense that Dave Caldwell will do some serious trading up in this draft. We're accumulating too many free agents to have a purpose for all eight draft picks. I think it's possible. Certainly he's done it before when he's targeted guys that he felt like were the last guy at that position, Tony, that he thought was a starting caliber guy or, you know, look, they made moves for Brandon Linder. They made moves for Allen Robinson. Guys that you feel like, wow, we really love. They remember, again, if you don't remember the details of the story, bears repeating, when they took Marquise Lee, they weren't expecting him to be there. They were fully prepared to take Allen Robinson with that high second round pick.
Yep.
And then they felt like, well, here's a scenario we didn't envision. We got to take this guy that probably has more, maybe more raw ability in Marquise Lee. I know you maybe look at Allen Robinson now and say, well, that's crazy. But the thing of it is, as he slid through the second round, they got proactive and they used some of their draft capital to move back up. They have signed a lot of guys, Tony. There's no question about that. They have signed a number of players. Now they've lost a few here and there as well. It wouldn't surprise me if they use all eight picks. It wouldn't surprise me, though, if they do package a few and they end up picking only six players if they feel like they can get more difference-making, impactful players. I'd be surprised at this point in time if they move up from the fifth pick. You know what I mean?
I don't think they're moving out of five.
Because I think they could move back depending on the way it plays out. Well, it depends on the offer.
And again, it's based on the history of Caldwell. The offers have always had to been, for someone to come to him, they've always had to be so high.
The one scenario, though, if Tennessee, let's say Tennessee went Ramsey, right? And then, you had, let's say Tunsil, Jack, and Bosa were all off the board. Those four players are all gone. And you're sitting there at five, and every quarterback's available. You might get the kind of offer that would finally entice Dave Caldwell to move off that spot. It's
maybe
possible with every quarterback available. But regardless, here's another one. Do you think the loser of Beecham versus Jokel goes to guard with Linder at center? I don't think they're tied together. We think Linder is going to get the first crack to be the starting center. They envision him being an excellent center, the capability to be an excellent center. I don't know if it's likely, but it's highly possible. Right, that the loser of that competition plays guard. It's not, put it this way, it's not written in stone that those two guys are both starting.
No.
But I think that if you had to bet right now, I would bet that both of those guys will start in some capacity on this team, assuming Kelvin Beecham is 100% healthy to start the season, if that makes sense for you. Let's see. Wasn't Jokel a right guard originally? He played right tackle and left tackle at Texas A&M. He played right tackle there because who do they have? They had at one point
Eugene Monroe.
No. I'm talking about at Texas A&M.
Because
remember even before Abui and before Jake Matthews, they had another guy, I want to say, that was playing left tackle, and Jokel played right tackle until his last year, but it escapes me. But regardless, tackle is what he was. Somebody texted that Miles Jack once went 1-on-1 in coverage for 13 plays on Marquise Lee with no catches. That was not in response to our talk about Marquise Lee a moment ago. That came in earlier than that. It was more a comment on Miles Jack. Somebody asked, we don't have John Osier in here anymore, but the question is pertinent nonetheless. Does John know how much he improves secondary will help the pass rush? I'm not saying we don't need another edge rusher, but I feel okay about the defense as a whole. That's on the text line from the 785. Certainly it helps. I think the overall feeling is it's exponentially more helpful when you get the better players up front. It helps the back end more than the reverse. Although the presence of Tayshaun Gibson, if he is, if and Prince Amukamara, if they're tighter in coverage, Tony, that will lead to the occasional coverage sack, so to speak, but it works a lot more in the other direction.
It usually works a lot more in the other direction. I think if you want to go to, you know, what everyone's been talking about for the last several months in the run that Denver had, I think what you saw in the AFC Championship game was an example of what coverage does to New England and Tom Brady. That wasn't just immediate pressure from the Denver Broncos. They got some of that too, but it was the fact that they had one of the best secondaries in the league on top of that too, with Chris Harris and Aqib Talib being able to lock down anybody in the National Football League and taking away those the routes that Tom Brady wants to throw, which is get the ball, get it out of his hand. They took that away, and that allowed pressure to get to him. So I think you did see an example of that working too, but they obviously have a dominant defensive line as well.
All right, let's go back to the phone, 641-1010. John on the north side next up on Jaguars Today. Good morning, John.
Hey, good morning, guys. Hey, I think it's this here. Jacksonville should have actually took a real big run at Chandler Jones, because guess what? You guys just pointed out what you just said. Is this here? The way to make a defensive backfield better is a great pass rush. If a guy's going to give me 12 and a half sacks, and over his three-year career, the last 3 years that he's done, Chandler Jones, 30 sacks over 3 years, this year, think about look at what Jacksonville did last year. Is that they couldn't even pressure the quarterback, and it made him look miserable. But when Denver did what they did in the Super Bowl, is this here? Affecting the quarterback makes the defensive backfield look that much better, 10 times better. This here, I would have gave up whatever Jacksonville needed to give up. Guys, I look at it like this here, and I understand you guys coming about, well, hey, we didn't get Olivier Vernon, and this here, and he would have been such a difference. We don't know what. He would have done in terms of renegotiating his contract with us. But as far as what I'm saying is that we should have got a 12.5 sack pass rusher per game there. Guys, come on, man. Look at it in a different version of light of this. Jacksonville hasn't had somebody affect a pass rusher since Tony Brackett. So let's get a grip on what we're trying to do in regards to what we're trying to win at this time. Gus Bradley needs to win right now. And I take it off the air, guys.
All right, John, I'm going to make an extreme example out of this, but you say, done whatever it takes. All right, we want Allen Robinson, Allen Hurns in your second-round pick. Is that good? All right, you're going to get a pass rusher. Oh, yeah, you're going to have to pay him $50 million guaranteed.
That is an extreme example.
It's an extreme
example. That's not what it would take.
Well, I'm saying, though, when you say pay whatever, I think we set our piece on this. First of all, we don't know how far they got into any,
sure.
You know,
it sounds like I would have considered it more than you because of the contract.
I wouldn't have considered it at all. If you're talking about a second-round pick and a player that has a chance to go in and be a starting caliber guy, on top of the prospect of paying that money, if you're at that point and you're willing to do that, I just would have paid whatever it takes in cash to Olivier Vernon. I would, even though you're already outside your comfort zone, make him an offer that he can't refuse. Or make him refuse an offer that he shouldn't refuse. You know, blow the Giants out of the water with the money. Because I'm telling you, if Olivier Vernon is going to get $52.5 million guaranteed right now, what do you think Chandler Jones will get next year when he is a 26-year-old free agent? He'll get $60 million guaranteed. So if you weren't willing to pay that contract, I'm not saying Chandler Jones isn't better, but you're going to have to pay the contract and then on top of it, give up a high second-round draft pick in this scenario, which you can get a very good player, you hope, and lock him in at a ridiculously cheap price for the next 4 years, and give up another piece. And here we're, you know, kicking around the idea of Marquise Lee. Who knows, you know, if that would have been the fit in New England or whatever the case may be. Way too rich for my blood. I mean, look, yes, Chandler Jones is a good pass rusher. Yes, they need pass rush. You don't get it at any expense. You're not going to trade Blake Bortles for a pass rusher, right? I mean, so you can't just say pay whatever it takes, because eventually you're going to get to a point where you say, well, wait a minute, pay whatever it takes, but I'm not going to do that. Well, then don't say pay whatever it takes if that's the case, because sometimes whatever it takes to get an elite pass rusher is going to be something that's outside of GM's comfort zone. I think clearly that would have been the case with this scenario with the Jaguars.
Sure, and I was okay if they had paid Olivier Vernon $52.5 million guaranteed, $53,
$55 million.
I would have been okay with it, and I think Chandler Jones is a better football player than Olivier Vernon. So if it took $60 million guaranteed to keep Chandler Jones, I would have been okay with that too, which is why I would have considered it a little bit more than you would. I'm okay with paying Chandler Jones that type of money because I think he's that type of player. I wouldn't want to give up my second-round pick and a starting offensive lineman. If it was Marquise Lee, I would have considered it. I would have seriously considered it.
Okay, you and I just disagree on that.
Yeah.
And again, this is not about am I willing to pay Chandler Jones the money. Keep in mind, too, Chandler Jones had that circumstance where he was either smoking pot or synthetic pot.
Sure.
And we don't know, you know, if that factors in at all or what, you know, what else may be going on with Chandler Jones. Is that a factor in why New England wants to move on from him? In addition, like, hey, you know what? Talent, yes, but you couple that with an off-field risk now, are you willing to pay that kind of money in that circumstance? Maybe not. I don't know. You know, clearly New England wasn't going to do it, and isn't that what everyone says? Oh, New England, they're geniuses. Whatever they do is the right move, right? Well, they're getting rid of the guy, you know, and they're trying to get ahead of the curve because I think they don't anticipate paying him $60 million guaranteed is a good idea. Because that's all they'd have to do is keep him on the roster, negotiate a contract that would top the market. They could probably get it done for Olivier Vernon's contract right now, I would think. Because you always have the threat of franchise tagging the guy next year, too, as an incentive to get a deal done. Tony, let's take a look before we take a break here. We got Tony Pauline coming up in about 10 minutes. Quick look at the fan feedback spotlight. Give us some of the combinations people are throwing out there in terms of the projected starting offensive line in 2016.
Here's what we got from Paulo, Jokel, Beecham, Linder, Can, and Parnell, going from left to right. From Joey, Jokel, a draft pick at left guard. Linder, Can, Parnell, he said just a wild guess. From Jarrell, Jokel, Shatley, Linder, Can, Parnell. So we've had three different combinations already. From Michael, Beecham, Jokel, Linder, Can, Parnell. From Dan, Beecham, Can, Wisniewski, Linder, Parnell. From Dodge, we got from left to right, Beecham, Jokel, Can, Linder, Parnell. From Duval Doom, Beecham, Jokel, Can, Linder, Parnell again. From James, LaRaven Clark as a draft pick coming in here. And followed that with Shatley, Linder, Can, Parnell. From Daniel, Beecham, Jokel, Linder, Can, Parnell. From Jeremy, Beecham, Bernadeau, Linder, Can, and Parnell. So the right side at least is pretty solid here from everybody writing in. But Eric says Jokel, Can, Linder, Bowenko, Parnell. And from Dusty, Beecham, Jokel, Linder, Can, Parnell.
A lot of similar combinations on Facebook. There's one from Les that says, why can't Beecham play guard? Well, he could, potentially. And we talked about
that. That's what we're
asking. He is right. He could possibly do that. and he is built more like a guard, for instance, than Luke Jokel is at 6'2". 303 is what he's listed at, compared to Luke Jokel's 6'6", 306. He's a lot more stretched out. They like to call that angular these days. But whatever the case may be, Les said with that, he's going to say Jokel on the outside, then Beecham, Linder, Can, and Parnell. If I had to guess right now, that would be my guess. Because I still think, I think in an ideal world, Tony, they'd want Jokel to win the job, right? So I don't think, again, it's necessarily a 51-49 position. It's what is the best combination of five guys that we can put on the field. Even if player X is a little bit better than player Y at this spot, if you play him in the other combination, is that the best five-man combination? I think that's the way you've got to look at it. And until we see them all on the field, we can't know that for sure. But right now, that would be my vote, what Les said. Jokel, Beecham, Linder, Can, Parnell in that order. I don't care. As long as they're good.
Yeah.
Doesn't matter to me, man. Shatley, Bowenko, and whoever else you want to throw in there. Just play them all as long as they can block somebody this year and open some holes in the running game. We'll come back. Tony Pauline, by the way, from DraftInsider.net, will join us to take a look at Miles Jack's Pro Day. What is your five, left to right?
My five would be, I think it's Jokel, Beecham, Linder, Can, and Parnell.
Yeah, so we're on the same page on that as far as our best guess. But, hey, it will be an open competition to left tackle. We know that much. with Kelvin Beachum coming in on what is reportedly going to be a two-year deal. He's not in town, vacation. That's why he hasn't signed the deal. That's why it's not official. But according to what we've been told, he has agreed to terms as has been reported around the National Football League. Coming back, we'll take a look at Miles Jack's Pro Day on a Metro Rooter Wednesday on 1010 XL and 92.5 FM.
Welcome our next guest to the Metro Diner Chat Counter.
These are delicious!
On 1010 XL, Metro Diner, where the locals eat.
That's the thing. I see myself as a football player. I kind of want the teams to decide for themselves. I feel like I can play any position. Me personally, I like being off the ball as a Mike, Will, Sam. Even I've heard some roles as a strong safety. I feel like I could do that role as kind of a Cam Chancellor type of role. So I feel like I could get the job done there.
Miles Jack, jack of all trades. That's an easy one right there. But nevertheless, appears to have some versatility. Had his pro day, at least part of it, one of his pro days at UCLA yesterday. Mike Dempsey, Fat Tony here with you. Tony Pauline, DraftInsider.net, joining us now on the hotline here. Tony, good morning. How are you, sir?
I'm okay. Miles Jack was actually prophetic there because, you know, the report that I got was he actually looked like a defensive back doing linebacker drills yesterday. So, you know, I guess listening to that interview, that piece of the interview that played, he is a man of his word.
He is a man of his word, Tony, and even to the point where I saw he said the thing he was most disappointed about was dropping an interception when the Chargers coaches had him running through some defensive back drills. Is he? I mean, we sit there and say, hey, Jalen Ramsey to the Chargers makes sense. If Ramsey were off the board at three, could you see the Chargers seeing Miles Jack as a replacement for Eric Weddle, or are we getting crazy here?
At 245 pounds, I think that's a bit crazy. But I think, you know, it's sort of, you know, versatility is the key word right now in the NFL. You have to be able to do a lot of different things, and you've got to be able to do them well. Left tackles have to be able to play right tackles. You know, linebackers have to be three-down linebackers. A replacement for Eric Weddle? No. But a guy who can occasionally line over the slot receiver, as he did in UCLA, maybe playing deep coverage on occasion, I think that's a possibility.
With Miles Jack, we talked a couple weeks ago coming out of the combine with a guy like Laremy Tunsil not going to do all the workouts. He did work out on field but didn't do the 40-yard dash. Some of those other tests that they like to run them through at the combine. Miles Jack had his pro day yesterday, didn't announce it until the day of that he wasn't going to run the 40, participate in a few other things, but did the on-field work. Was there a little bit of frustration? What was the reaction from some of the teams, the guys there that were talking about Miles Jack to him not having the full workout yesterday and not letting people know that?
Yeah, and I'll quote what I said in my report yesterday. It rubbed people the wrong way. I mean, people were like, okay, listen, we understand if he wants to do this, but why didn't he tell us beforehand? This way, instead of coming out here again in April, he should have just scheduled one workout in April. Then we all would have, you know, traveled for many of these teams across the country rather than having to make two trips. So there was a bit of it didn't really sit well with people. I mean, that was probably the only bad thing of the day. They just would have liked to have been informed beforehand so they would have been able to make their travel plans accordingly. The feeling was that even though he was great in the position drills, he was good in the jumps, he should have given everybody notice to say, hey, listen, I'm not running the 40s. I'm not doing the shuttles today. I'm going to do them in April, and, you know, I'm going to maybe do a full workout then.
I'm going to guess that does not remove Miles Jack off anyone's draft board. However, you know, so Tony, you said he looked great in the workouts. Just tell us what kind of reviews did you hear from what he did do yesterday?
Well, basically, he showed no ill effects of the knee surgery. I mean, he was quick and explosive, changing direction, and that's a big thing. You know, it's not just about, you know, like you said, the 40's semi-important, but, you know, he's not going to run 40 yards in a straight line too much as opposed to the number of times that he's going to have to run 5 yards to his left, 5 yards to his right, make those quick cuts, drop back. It's just about as much how quickly he's able to drop into coverage, and is he fluid dropping into coverage, which he was. I mean, he got a little bit gassed at the end of the workout. All of those guys, from what I heard, were getting gassed because it was a hot day out there. There was a little bit of slipping and sliding, but I think it was more the field conditions. Basically, as I said in my review, he looked like a remarkable athlete. That is a term that was presented to me yesterday, and it's funny because the last time I talked with you guys, I mentioned how NFL decision makers were basically labeling him as a rare athlete. Well, he's gone from a rare athlete to a remarkable athlete in the course of his pro day. So, I mean, everything that he did was good.
Did you see anything in the workout? I know we've talked about Miles Shaq a lot in the last month or so with you, Tony, and about his coverage skills, what you think he projects to be at the National Football League, and oftentimes these off-season workouts, getting ready for the draft, the combine, the pro day, these kinds of things are about confirming what you saw on tape.
Yeah.
Have you seen anything? It's our first chance to see Miles Shaq. Did you see anything that makes you think what you saw on tape isn't the Miles Shaq that is going to be there coming back from this knee injury?
No, like I said, it showed no ill effects. I mean, it looked like, and there was, if you read my piece with the Eagles, there was a lot of anxiety and anxiousness. People wanted to see how he was going to perform because they didn't know about the knee injury. And, you know, basically, they were given A-plus grades. And he was flawless in his pass cover drills, basically, which is what we saw on film. If you saw him right before he got hurt against BYU, he's covering the slot receiver. He's running 30 yards down the field with the slot receiver. Showed that same athleticism during the position work yesterday.
You're posting reports on PhiladelphiaEagles.com, right? I know you're at WalterFootball.com as well, right, Tony?
Yeah, I'm all over the place.
I know you are.
Every Monday I do a buzz column for the Philadelphia on the Eagles site, the Eagles official site. They had me do that, and that's where I posted the sort of the preview about Miles Shaq.
All right, and then one last guy we'll ask you about, because you raved about his performance yesterday, was the other UCLA linebacker, Aaron Wallace. Tell us just how well he did and where he projects to go on draft day.
Yeah, he's probably going to go somewhere in the middle of the last day. I don't know that he's going to go any higher. I mean, a guy that doesn't have a big body of work, was basically used as an up-at-the-line sort of linebacker, but he's incredibly athletic. Ran the low 4.5s yesterday, had a good athletic workout, then transitioned those into position drills. When I talk to people, they say they were very surprised and happy to see a guy who basically spent his life in college football at the line of scrimmage, making plays forward, showing the ability to make plays in reverse. Basically, he was fluent in his hips, he had good footwork, a little bit of slipping and sliding, got kind of gassed at the end because he was tired because of the hot weather. But basically, his range, his ability to basically move with ease and reverse as quickly as he goes forward, as well as sideline to sideline, really bode well for his draft stock. I think you're probably going to see him somewhere in that fifth round range.
If the knee is no longer a question with Miles Shaq going forward, if people feel good about the health of that knee, what questions would scouts have about Miles Shaq projecting to the NFL level?
Height. I mean, he's 6'1". You know, he could be the greatest cover linebacker in the world, but when he's going to be tough, when he's going up against 6'4" tight ends, I mean, that's the bottom line. It's going to be a mismatch. I'm sure over the course of time, he'll find ways to basically not be exploited. But, you know, when you're 6'1", it doesn't matter what kind of skills you have. When you're going up against 6'5", 6'4½ tight ends, it's going to be difficult.
All right, there he is, Tony Pauline. And by the way, the easiest thing to do is follow Tony on Twitter, at Tony Pauline, spelled just like it sounds, Paulline. And Tony links up to all his different reports and stories and articles that are out there, so it's a good jumping-off point. Tony, always appreciate the insight, and I have a feeling shortly after April 1st we'll be calling back to get a little bit more on Miles Shaq from you. Thanks, buddy.
I look forward to it. Thank you.
All right, you got it. Tony Pauline, one of the best in the biz, if not the best, at Tony Pauline on Twitter. DraftInsider.net is the website. So, you know, just keep an eye on everything that's going on. It's fascinating last week, Tony. Was it Wednesday that Alabama had their pro day? They had a pro day Wednesday or Thursday last week, I think, right?
And yeah,
we didn't even bat an eye at it. Like, this is Alabama. They're loaded with NFL prospects. Tons of guys. Maybe guys that could help the Jags. Certainly guys that could help the Jags. And with free agency going on, it just became kind of an afterthought. So try to pay attention. We've had some of the bigger ones already happen, Ohio State last week and now UCLA as well. So some of the top prospects that will surely be on the Jaguars' radar getting their pro day workouts in already. That does it for us today. Thanks again to Metro Rooter. They bring you Jaguars Today every Wednesday here on 1010XL and 92.5 FM. Appreciate John Osier stopping by from Jaguars.com. Appreciate Tony Pauline popping in right there. Jags get Kelvin Beachum at least agree to terms. Contract, as we're told, will be signed once he gets back into town. A pre-planned vacation is in the offing for Kelvin Beachum. So they continue to do the work of building this roster. Sean Spence visiting yesterday. Who knows who will be next for the Jacksonville Jaguars. But the boys of XL Primetime will get the next crack at back discussing that. For Tyler Devitt, for Joe Fortunato, for Fat Tony, I'm Mike Dempsey. That does it for us on Jaguars Today. XL Primetime is next on 1010XL and 92.5 FM.
You guys have a good day. Peace.